You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. As well, you can hear these podcasts at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. There are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, which are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 232 by Rudolf Steiner, 14 lectures translated, revised translation by Pauline Wuerle, entitled Mystery, Knowledge, and Mystery Centers. This is Lecture 5, entitled The Mineral, Vegetable, and Animal Creations. On the basis of what I said yesterday, it is possible to speak in greater detail of certain events in the course of the Earth's evolution, which have brought about its present form. As you will remember, I said that with clairvoyant consciousness a relationship can be established with the metallic substance of the earth, in fact with everything in the earth, that acquires substantial reality by virtue of the veins of metal running through it. This relationship, that can be established with the earth's metallic element, enables us to look back over the earth's history. It is particularly interesting to look back at what happened in the process of evolution in the times preceding the Atlantean epoch, to the period I rather loosely call the Lemurian Age, and also to the epoch immediately before that, when the Earth was recapitulating the Sun stage. It is interesting to look back at these happenings, for we can get an impression from them of the extent to which everything we do with Earth's existence is capable of change. We are accustomed today to regard the Earth as having always existed in the form in which it appears to us now. We inhabit a continent where we are surrounded by plants, animals, and birds of the air. We know that we ourselves are living in a kind of atmospheric ocean surrounding the Earth, that we take oxygen out of this atmosphere into ourselves, and that our relation to nitrogen also plays a certain part. On the whole, we simply think of ourselves as surrounded by air consisting of oxygen and nitrogen. We are also aware of the seas and oceans. Further details need not be mentioned, and from all this we get a picture of the planet we inhabit in the universe. But the Earth has not always been as it is today. It has undergone tremendous changes, and if we go back to the epochs I have just mentioned, perhaps only to the Lemurian epoch or a little earlier, we shall find an Earth very different from that of today. Let us begin by thinking of the air we breathe today and which we regard as being devoid of life. Even this atmosphere proves to be quite different from anything to be found in early periods of the Earth's evolution. Still farther in the past, something resembling a solid core of the Earth, as we know it today, is in evidence, surrounded by an atmosphere. But in those days, there was nothing at all like the air we breathe today. In this air, oxygen and nitrogen play the most prominent part, carbon and hydrogen a subsidiary role, and sulfur and phosphorus a role of less importance still. But it is really not possible to speak of oxygen, nitrogen, carbon, sulfur, and the rest in those early times, simply because what the chemists call by these names today did not then exist. If a spirit being of those times were to have met a modern chemist who spoke to him about carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, and the rest, he would have retorted that nothing of the kind exists. We can justifiably speak of carbon, oxygen, and nitrogen today, but this could not have been done in those early times. Oxygen, nitrogen, carbon, as we speak of them today, became possible only when the Earth had reached a certain density and had developed forces such as it contains today. Oxygen, nitrogen, potassium, sodium, and so on, all the so-called lighter metals, did not exist at all in those times. On the other hand, in the Earth's environment, which is filled today by our atmosphere, there was something a little like albumin in consistency, a very fine fluid halfway between our present water and air. The Earth at that time was entirely surrounded by an albuminous atmosphere. The albumin we know in eggs today is very much coarser, but a comparison is possible. When, at a later time, the earth became denser, what we today call carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and so on, were differentiated out of this atmosphere around the earth. But it would be erroneous to say that the then albuminous atmosphere was composed of these elements, for they were not specific ingredients of it. Nowadays, we think of everything as composite, but that is nonsense. Certain substances of a higher nature are not always composed of what comes to light when they are analyzed. The different ingredients cease to be there. Carbon does not appear as carbon, nor oxygen as oxygen, for it is a substance of a higher nature. As I said, it can be described as extremely fluid albumin. And all this substance surrounding the earth in those days was permeated by the inpouring cosmic ether, which imbued it with life. Thus it was the cosmic ether pouring into it which gave this substance its life. However, it did not only have life, but in addition it was differentiated in a curious way. For instance, in one area this substance was structured so that people would have suffocated in it had they been there, and in another area the structure of it would have invigorated them. Chemical elements in the modern sense did not then exist, but certain formations arose then which remind one of the effects of the chemical elements we know. The whole sphere teemed with sparkling, gleaming reflections of light, and it was warmed through and through by the cosmic ether. Such were the properties in that early period of the Earth atmosphere, if I may use the modern expression. The first things that formed from out of the cosmos and the earth, as I described yesterday, were the primeval mountains. The quartz to be found in those mountains, with its beautiful structure and relative transparency, was, as it were, poured into the earth from the cosmos. This is how it happens that when a seer, endowed with imaginative vision, enters into these primeval rocks, which are the hardest substance on earth, they become for him eyes with which to see the cosmos, the same cosmos which implanted these eyes into the earth. Only the quartz and siliceous substances which permeated the whole atmosphere and were gradually deposited as primeval mountains were not as hard as they are today. They hardened into the state we know because of the conditions that prevailed in later times. In the form in which they emerged from the cosmos, their consistency was scarcely more solid than wax. A quartz crystal to be seen in the mountains today is so hard that if you were to hit your head against it, your skull, not the quartz, would crack. But in the far distant past, because of the all-pervading life, this primeval stone was as pliable as wax when it emerged from the cosmos, and it was also transparent. Its consistency can be pictured only by thinking of it in connection with the sense of touch. If one could have touched it, it would have felt like wax. Thus the primeval mountains consisted of wax that showered down out of the cosmos and then hardened. Silicic acid also had wax form in those times. I described yesterday how pictures of the cosmos arise in clairvoyant contemplation of this dense rock. These pictures represent a more spiritual aspect of the phenomenon that was once absolutely perceptible as a kind of plant form in portions of the transparent, wax-like silica emerging from the cosmos. Any observer of nature will know that in the mineral kingdom today, records of an earlier age are still to be found. When you look closely at certain stones, you will see something like a plant form within them. But in that distant past, a quite unusual phenomenon was that pictures were projected from the cosmos into the atmosphere, into this albuminous atmosphere, pictures that were not only seen, but were reproduced, physically photographed, onto the inside of the wax substance. And then there was a remarkable development. The fluid albumin filled these pictures, and they became somewhat denser and harder, and were then no longer pictures. The siliceous substance fell away from them, dispersed into the atmosphere, And in the earliest Lemurian age, there appeared gigantic floating plant formations which remind one of the algae of today. They were not rooted in the soil. There was, as yet, no soil. They floated in the fluid albumen, drawing their own substance from it. But they did not merely float in it. They began to shine, to shed light, and then vanished, appeared again, and vanished. They were capable of going through change to such an extent that this arising and disappearing was possible. Try to picture this vividly. It is a vista very different from anything to be seen in our environment today. If, as a modern person, you could project yourself into that far-off time, set up a little observation hut, and look out on that ancient world, you would see the following spectacle. A plant image appears, a gigantic plant image similar, as I said, to our present-day algae or even palms. It would not appear to grow out of the earth in springtime and die away in the autumn. It would shoot up in springtime, it is true, but the spring was then much shorter, and reach an enormous size. Then it would vanish again in the fluid albuminous element. As an observer, you would see a constant change between the greening process and the fading away. You would not speak of plants covering the earth, but of plants appearing out of the cosmos like airy clouds, condensing and then dissolving, a greening in the albuminous atmosphere. Of the period which would correspond more or less to our summer, you would say that it was the time when the environment of the earth became green. But you would look upward to the green rather than downward. In this way, we can picture how the siliceous element in the earth's atmosphere penetrates into the earth and draws to itself the force of the plants, which is actually out in the cosmos. This is indeed how the plant kingdom came down to the earth from the cosmos. In the period of which I am speaking, however, we must say of the plant world that it was something that came into being in the atmosphere and passed away again. And there is also something else to be said. If, as a human being today, you project yourself by means of a relationship with the metallic element of the earth into those past times, you would feel as if all this belonged to you yourself, as if you had something to do with the process of greening and fading then taking place in the atmosphere. Now, if you think back to your own childhood, that is simply a memory of a short span of time. If, however, you recall a pain suffered in your childhood, that is something which really belongs to you. Similarly, in the cosmic memory of the past, kindled through the metallic element of the earth, this process of greening and fading in the far past seems to be something which belongs to you. As human beings, we were at that time already connected with the earth, which was surrounded by this watery, albuminous atmosphere, although we were still entirely spiritual. It is correct to say, and this idea must be got hold of, that these plants seen in the atmosphere at that time were something pushed out, excreted, in quotes, by the human entity. This happened at the time when the human entity was still one with the whole earth. And this same concept must also be extended to apply to something quite different, which humanity also pushed out. I will tell you what happened. Everything that I have so far described is the result of the fact that the silica element had already, at an earlier time, been precipitated into the atmosphere as the wax-like substance of which I have spoken. But apart from this, there was the albuminous atmosphere upon which the infinitely diverse forces of the cosmos were working, those forces which modern science chooses to ignore. This is why our modern knowledge is no real knowledge at all, because a great many happenings on Earth simply would not take place if they were not brought about by cosmic forces and influences. Since our modern scientists do not speak of these cosmic forces, they do not speak of reality at all. They take no account of what lives in things. Even in the tiniest section looked at through a microscope, not only earthly forces, but cosmic forces are at work. and if these cosmic forces are not taken into account, you do not have reality. Thus cosmic forces were working in that remote time upon the fluid albumen in the Earth's environment, and these forces worked upon certain sections of it in such a way that it coagulated. Cosmic coagulated albumen swam about in the atmosphere. However, these forms were not cloud masses, but the definite forms of living creatures. In reality, they were animals consisting of the coagulated albumen, which had solidified into a gelatinous state, into a substance similar to gristle as it is today. Animal creatures of this kind were present in the fluid albuminous atmosphere. The forms of our present reptiles, lizards, and the like resemble on a small scale the forms of those earlier animals. But the latter were not so solid. They existed as gelatinous masses and were inherently mobile. At one moment, their limbs were extended, at another, drawn in, comparable with what a snail does with its feelers today. Now, while these forms were coming into being above the earth, something further than silica was being deposited in the earth from out of the cosmos. It is what you find today as the calcium constituents of the earth. If you go not necessarily into the oldest mountains, but only into the Jura Mountains, you will find limestone rocks. It came down to the earth at a later stage than the silica, but it too came from the cosmos. This chalk is to be found as a second substance in the earth. This chalk deposit constantly oozed farther into the earth, and its actual effect was that at its core, the earth became denser and denser. And in certain localities, the chalk combined with the silica. But this chalk retained its cosmic forces and was altogether different from the crude substance which chemists consider it to be. Wherever it appears, chalk contains relatively latent formative forces. Now, in an epoch rather later than the period I described to you, when the greening appeared and then faded away, we find that within this albuminous atmosphere there is a constant rising and falling of the chalk. Chalk mist is followed by chalk rain. There was a period in the history of the earth when what we know today as water vapor and falling rain was a chalky substance rising and falling. Then comes a remarkable development. The chalk was particularly attracted to the gelatinous, gristly masses. It filled them, impregnated them. And thanks to the earth forces, which, as I told you, it contains, it dissolved the whole gelatinous masses of coagulated albumen. The chalk took away from the heavens what the heavens had formed in the albuminous substance and brought it nearer the earth. And out of this, the animals with calcareous bones gradually came into being. This development happened in the later Lemurian epoch. We must therefore think of plants in their earliest form as pure gifts from heaven, and the animals and all animal-like formations we must regard as something which, after the heavens had presented the earth with chalk, the earth has taken, literally filched, from the heavens and made into creatures of earth. The happenings of these ancient times affect us strangely, and we most certainly feel a connection to them, so that we feel this whole process also to be a process taking place in a dimension of our human nature that, as it were, reaches as far as the cosmos. Such things, of course, sound paradoxical because they touch upon a reality of which a modern person usually has no conception. Nevertheless, they are absolutely true. It would correspond with reality today to speak from out of one's memory and say, quote, "When I was 9 years old, I sometimes gave my friend a sound bashing," close quote. You may be pleased or sorry this happened, but nevertheless, the memory of it rises up. Similarly, there rises up in this human consciousness, expanded through a relation to the metals, and which becomes an earth consciousness, the realization that in the process of forming your whole being as it came down from heaven onto the earth, you pushed forth the plants from out of yourself. They are something you have secreted. You also pushed out animal nature. Your desire in the first place was that in the form of coagulated gelatin or gristle, it should become a secreted product of yours. But then you were compelled to realize that pre-existent earth forces took this task over from you and reshaped the animals in their different forms, which are products of the earth. You can feel these happenings through cosmic memory to be your own experience, just as the other incident I mentioned is an experience belonging to brief earthly life. As a human being, you feel connected with these happenings. But all this is connected with various other processes. I am speaking briefly of only the most important ones. Many other things were happening. For example, during the period when what I have been describing was taking place, the whole atmosphere was also filled with sulfur in a highly rarefied state. This rarefied sulfur combined with other substances, and from this union there arose the ancestors of what is present in the ores today as pyrites, as galena, as zinc blend, and so forth. All these substances developed at that time in an earlier form, in a soft, still wax-like consistency, and the body of the earth became filled with them. Then, when these metallic ores emerged from the universal albuminous substance and formed the solid crust of the earth, there was really nothing much else for the metals to do, unless human beings made some use of them, than to reflect about the past. And we do indeed find that they conjure up for the inner vision everything that has happened in the earth's history. However, now the time has come for a human being who feels these things to be his own cosmic or at least terrestrial experience to say to himself, through having cast away from yourself the primeval plant form, which has since developed into the later plant formations, through having cast from you the complicated processes of animal evolution, you have also rid yourself of everything that previously stood in the way of your having a will within your own human entity. It was necessary for human beings to push all this out, just as today they must secrete sweat and other things. This had to be got rid of so that the human being ceased to be a being in whom only gods willed, but became an individual with his own will, which, even if it was not yet free, was nevertheless a will of his own. All this was necessary as a preparation for the earthly nature of human beings. In the course of further development, during which there were many other happenings, everything changed. Naturally, when the metallic ores had become separate in the earth, the whole atmosphere also changed. It became far less sulfurous. Oxygen gradually gained predominance over the sulfur, whereas in ancient times sulfur was a very significant factor in the earth's atmosphere. In this changed environment, humanity was able to cast away other elements from itself, and these are the successors of the earlier plants and animals. As these later plant forms gradually came into existence, they took root, but in a substance that was still very soft. Out of the earlier reptilian and lizard-like creatures, animals with a more complicated structure developed, traces of which modern geology is still discovering. Nothing at all of the earliest animal creation of which I spoke can be found. It was not until the later epoch when, for a second time, as it were, humanity cast out more complicated structures, that the conditions I have been describing were present. Cloud formations continually forming and dissolving, greening, appearing, and then fading again. Soft animal-like structures, which, however, were real animals. At times they contracted and had a life of their own, and then they lost their identity in the general life of the earth. All these developments resulted in greater solidification. Among animals of this kind was one which at that time looked more or less like this, and there's a diagram. It had a very large eye-like organ surrounded by a sort of aura. Adjoining this organ, a kind of snout protruded forward. The body was lizard-like, with powerful fins. Such structures were already more solid in themselves. It would be equally correct to speak of wings as of fins in the case of these animals, for they were not yet sea creatures. There was as yet no sea. There was only the soft earth mass and the still pliable elements in the surrounding atmosphere, from which only the sulfur had to some extent gone. In this atmosphere, such animals flew or swam. It was something between flying and swimming. Besides these, there were other animals whose limbs were not like this, but which were formed more from out of the forces of the earth itself. These limbs were more reminiscent of the limbs of today's lower species of mammals, and so on. If someone living in the present were to travel, not in space but in time, and go back into the period connecting the Lemurian with the Atlantean age, he would be confronted by a strange spectacle. Huge flying lizards with a lantern-like formation on their heads, radiating light and warmth, and down below a soft marshy earth, but with something very familiar about it, because it would seem to a visitor of today to be emitting an odor between that of decaying substance and green plants. The mud of this soft earth would emit an odor partly seductive and partly extremely pleasant. And in it, moving about like creatures of the swamp, there would be these other animals, with more in the way of limbs reminiscent of the lower species of mammals today, but with powerful formations below, more powerful, of course, than the webbed feet of ducks, by means of which they propelled themselves through the swamp, and also rocked up and down. Humanity had to go through this whole process of secretion, so that independent feeling might be prepared in them for earthly existence. Thus we have the first stage of vegetable-animal creation, consisting of the products secreted by the human being, and this prepared the way for him to become a being on earth possessed of will. If all these products had remained within him, they would have taken over the will, which would have become a wholly physical manifestation. By casting them off, he got rid of physical matter, and his will became a quality of the soul. Similarly, it was through this second stage of creation that human feeling became a soul quality. Plants and mammals somewhat familiar to those we know did not appear until the middle or later period of Atlantis. It was then that the earth acquired a structure definitely resembling that of today. During this phase, the substances known to modern chemists, such as carbon, oxygen, the heavy metals, and so on, gradually developed, and it was then possible for the third casting-off process to take place, and humanity secreted the plants and animals to be found in the environment today. As this environment came into existence, the human race was being prepared to live on Earth as thinking beings. In those early times, humanity was not so divided up as we are today into single individuals. There was one universal humanity, still of the nature of spirit and soul, descending into the ether. For as this ether streamed down from out of the cosmos onto the earth, it brought humanity with it from the cosmos. The happenings I have described in Title Occult Science then took place. Humanity came to earth, then departed to other planets, and subsequently returned during the Atlantean epoch. This went on concurrently with other events. For whenever it was a matter of casting something off, humanity could not remain with the earth, but had to depart from it in order that certain forces, now more of the nature of soul, might be strengthened. Humanity then came down again to the earth. These happenings add details to what you can read in Title Occult Science. Humanity, in truth, belongs to the cosmos, and it is human beings who prepare the earthly environment for themselves, by casting off the kingdoms of nature and sending them forth into the earth realm. They are now here in the earthly kingdom and form our earthly environment. By sending these secretions into the earth realm, human beings have equipped themselves bit by bit with the faculties of willing, feeling, and thinking. It was only in the course of time that we evolved into what we are today, thinking, feeling, and willing beings, depending on an organic physical bodily basis during our life between birth and death, with a connection also to the beings who, in order to further our evolution, have in the course of time separated from the human realm, and in this state of separation have metamorphosed into their present forms. It is clear from what has been said that we cannot generalize in an abstract way about the relationship that can be established with the metals of the earth. For it is like this. When a relationship has been established with the metals, which hold within themselves the memory of past earth happenings, then one really can say something about what is remembered and discover for oneself what I have been describing to you today. If we now go back to still earlier times, we shall find that everything is even more transient, more evanescent. Think of the grandeur and the majesty of the vista I described to you, those appearing and disappearing wax-like silica formations in which were depicted images of the plant world that filled themselves with the soft albumen, thus producing in the earth environment up above the phenomenon of greening and fading. Think of all this, and you will realize that in contrast to the plants growing out of the earth today, with their firmly formed roots and leaves, or even our present trees with their strong trunks, all this was as ephemeral as a cloud. How fleeting these earlier forms were compared to a present-day oak. The oak may not itself be proud of its strength, but the people living near such trees are usually the ones who are guilty of pride, for they mistake their frequent weakness for the sturdiness of the oak. If you compare this sturdiness of our present oaks with those ancient ethereal plant formations appearing and passing away like shadowy mists in the atmosphere, condensing and then vanishing away, or to take more glaring examples, if you compare a thick-skinned hippopotamus or elephant or any other heavily built animal with those earlier creatures that emerged from the universal albumen and were laid hold of by the chalk and becoming rather more solid as a result, developed the rudiments of bones and were drawn down into the animality of the earth, using this expression more in an adjectival sense. If you picture all this and compare the earth's present density, should I say the elephantine density of the earth today, with the conditions that once existed, you will no longer be able to doubt that the farther back you go into the past, the more volatile and transient the phenomena become. In even more remote times, we come to conditions where there are only surging and weaving color formations appearing and disappearing. And if you turn to the descriptions of old Sun or old Saturn given in the book titled Occult Science, you will realize how obvious it is that conditions were of that nature, knowing that they were in that remote past. At the later stage, the transient plant formations filled themselves with the albuminous substance and were like cloud formations. At still earlier stages, we can speak only of formations appearing as color processes, as I described in connection with old Sun and old Saturn. If therefore we go back from physical conditions with the elephantine quality through finer physical conditions, we finally come to a time when conditions were entirely of a spiritual nature. In this way, by paying attention to actual realities, we come to realize that everything belonging to the earth is of spiritual origin. The earth originated in the spiritual realm. This is a matter of actual vision. And I think it is a beautiful idea to be able to say to oneself, If you penetrate into the interior of the earth and let the hard metals tell you what they remember, they will tell you that once upon a time they were so widely diffused over the expanses of the cosmos that they were not physical substances at all, but were color, weaving, hovering, undulating in the spiritual cosmos. The memories of the earth's metals go back to a condition when each metal was a cosmic color, permeating the others, when the cosmos was a kind of inner rainbow, a spectrum that differentiated out and only then became physical. And it is at this point that the, I would like to call it, merely theoretical impression communicated to us by the earth's metals becomes a moral impression. For every metal tells us, quote, I come from the expanses of the cosmos, far away from the earth. I come from the heavenly realms and have been compressed, and am now under an enchantment in the interior of the earth. But I await my redemption. For in time to come my essential being will again fill the cosmos. Close quote. When we learn to understand the speech of the metals in this way, gold tells us of the sun, lead of Saturn, copper of Venus. And then these metals say to us, quote, just as truly as there was a time when we were spread out in the vast expanses, copper reaching Venus and lead Saturn, we are now under a spell down here, and will again stretch far out when the earth's mission is fulfilled, and humanity will have achieved on the earth what they can achieve only on the earth. We accepted this enchantment in order that humanity might become free beings on earth. When human beings have won their freedom, then our disenchantment can begin. This disenchantment has already been in the process of preparation for a long time. We have only to understand it. We must understand how the earth's development, together with that of human beings, will proceed in the future. The end of Lecture 5.